We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. John Schmelk and Nita Marks, and our next guest is Jenny Ventress.
Yay!
She writes for the Monday Morning Quarterback, of course, Peter King's excellent site via Sports Illustrated. And Jenny's done a lot of cool stuff here with the combine and some of these rookies
over the last couple of years.
She's done an excellent job, so we want to try to go in depth with her today on what she's been up to. And Anita let me know that you had a really cool opportunity to kind of step in during one of these interview processes and kind of see what's going on with some of these players.
Yeah, no, it was pretty neat. I wanted to sort of get in the room and see one of these. Every team has 60 formal interviews that they can do with players, and each of the interviews is 15 minutes. So the teams have suites at the Crown Plaza Hotel and, you know, bring prospects in every night between 6 and 11 p.m. Sorry about that. A couple of technical issues.
Also, radio engineer Anita Marks.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Thank you. So, but every night between 6 and 11 p.m., teams interview these guys in this formal interview room. So it's, you know, usually the GM, the head coach, position coach, coordinator, whoever the prospects are they're bringing in. So got to sit down in one of the interviews last night with a quarterback interviewing with the team, and it was 15 minutes. It was so, it goes by so quickly. I mean, that's the thing that really jumped out to me, is that you think that teams get so much out of meeting the guys, and a lot of times they can, but it's 15 minutes is jam-packed with, they're going over film, they're asking them about their background, and there's an air horn that sounds at the end, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, we're over, you know, like the time's up and you have to get what you get in that short amount of time. It's kind of crazy.
But really cool in regard to like what they put the player through. Yeah. I'm sure, I mean, we've talked about it this week. I'm sure it's got to be very nerve-wracking for any player to sit there and not sure what's going to be asked. Apparently, a few of the questions that I've heard this week is, one team out there, we're not sure what team it is asking, are you attracted to your mother? What is that? Another question out there is,
that's a weird one.
Okay, right. Another one out there is, I mean, just to give you an idea of like what these guys are going through, and keep in mind these guys are like what, 20, 21 years old. Yeah. Another question out there is, if you were to murder somebody, would you use a gun? Would you use a gun or a knife? What? It's insane questions.
It is, and you know, I think the guys are really well coached, so I think what teams are trying to do is to put them in situations with these strange off-the-wall questions that they can't be coached for. So, you know, the player I sat in with last night, the first question was, tell us about your family. He spent 3 minutes or so talking about his family. So that's one-fifth of the interview,
yeah,
right? And so,
he was coached to do that.
Exactly.
Because what is it called again? It's called
filibustering.
There,
right?
You go,
so,
filibustering.
You know, you spend the time talking about a safe topic, and then maybe you avoid. But, you know, is your mother hot question? I mean, that one strikes me as not only is it really a strange question.
That is very Sigmund Freudish going on right
there,
right?
Exactly. But the other thing is, like, in this era of, you know, NFL teams being more aware about how we treat women and being respectful of, you know, all the domestic violence and sexual assault, not that that is related, but it's the objectification of your own mother. I think that's not a line of questioning that they should be going down. It's sort of strange to me.
And how are you going to respond to that? No, my mom's not hot. I mean,
yeah, I think pretty much that's exactly how you respond, to be quite honest with you.
I'd probably say she was hot in college. I said, like, you know, yeah, my dad told me how hot she was in college, but... Yeah, now she, I don't know, you know, she's, you know, she's put on a little weight.
And
I don't know. I mean, what do you, how do you respond to that? I don't know.
In the interview you were in, Jenny, was it mostly off the field stuff, or did they do a lot of football stuff? I know some teams like to put like plays up, bring video in, analyze a play. How did they kind of split their time?
It was half and half. So the first 7 or 8 minutes or so were questions about, you know, the player's background. Is there anything you need to tell us? That's a popular question that teams ask players. Now, this guy was very clean cut. He had no off-the-field issues. But that gives players a chance to bring up something like if they've had a positive drug test in college or if they got suspended for the game. You know, the scouts and have done all this legwork in the fall, so the teams know most of the answers. But especially when they're interviewing juniors who are coming out into the draft, this is their first chance to sort of hear directly from them. So, yeah, the first half of the interview was background questions, and then the second half they put plays up on the video screen. And so the quarterback's coach had picked a series of plays. A lot of times they pick the first play. In this case, was they call it a sugar play, some play that's like he's done well on. It gets him talking, he feels comfortable, and then maybe, in this case, they didn't hit him with, like, an interception that he had thrown or anything, but it was four throws in a row. But They only got through four, and then the air horn sounded, and time was up. But it was really intense. You know, they put the play on the screen, and this guy, we could tell, was a very smart quarterback, as many quarterbacks are, obviously. But he knew right away, like, what the play was, what the outcome was, and they were asking him things that will affect how he would perform in the NFL. So what is the communication with the sideline like? What's your call in the huddle? What's the protections? If your receiver falls down on the sail route, you know, where would you go with the football instead? So
wow.
It was very detailed stuff.
Now, what was really interesting is that we had a chance to run into Mark Dominic, who was on the show yesterday, and Jerry and Jenny shared the story with him, and he said that he used to do that when he was with the Bucs. But what he would do is that he would put up, for example, he would put up a play where, like, the kids is like in the red zone, and then he'd say, how did you get there? Because what they wanted to do is they wanted to test his memory in regard to that series, and see how much he can recall in regard to that series, what plays were called, and how he even got into the red zone. So, I mean, it's fascinating to me. It really is.
It's trying to get the most you can out of this situation. So you only have 15 minutes. So what is the way that you can get the best sense of what his football aptitude and IQ is? I mean, to me, the fact that a quarterback can recall – can see a play instantly that happened 3-4 months ago, you know, and know exactly what the outcome was and what all the calls were, what he was seeing on the play. And he was saying, I was expecting quarters coverage, but we got a different coverage, and so I had to adjust. I mean, to me, that was impressive. So I said to the head coach on the way out, how does he able to do that? And he said, the issue is if they're not able to do that, right? And he said, that's the base standard. And it just sort of goes to show how hard it is to play the position of quarterback. I mean, we sit here at the Common every year. Why is it so hard to pick the next great quarterback? Why is it so hard to find 32 quarterbacks to start in the NFL? And then you start to see this guy who may or may not ever be an NFL starter, and the amount of, you know, mental capacity that it takes to play that position at the college level, and then the NFL is a whole other jump, you know?
Interesting. I want to go back for a second. You did a great series a couple years ago with Andre Williams.
Yes,
from Monday Morning Quarterback. And obviously still a member of the Giants. I know Giant fans are a little disappointed in the year he had in year number two. Do you keep up with Andre? Do you stay in touch with him? And kind of how's he trying to bounce back to become a more of a fixture running back for the Giants?
Yeah, and I mean, I think last year was a tough year for the running backs overall. With the rotation, it seemed like it was hard for any of them to get into a rhythm. So I'm interested to see how they'll handle that moving forward. But, you know, I do keep up with Andre. I think the thing with him that's pretty impressive is he's always, like, trying to figure out ways to get better. And I remember when he was coming out in the draft, the big knock on him was his hands. And here at the Combine, he performed well, but he dropped a couple passes in the position drills. And so he saw a sports psychologist. He was doing juggling. And he was having sessions of, you know, mentally, how do you, you know, focus on the ball and focus on the catch? So that was just one example of something. And, you know, I think that's an ongoing work in progress for him. You know, catching the ball doesn't come easily naturally to all running backs. But that's one example of how diligent he is. I just think he's an old soul, and I think he understands what it means to be a professional athlete. He fits into the Giants culture really well. And so I think he's someone who can be productive moving forward. I just think, you know, you have to figure out the right situations. You know, they tried to use him in the goal line sometimes. He wasn't always satisfied. And I know from talking to him a couple of times last year, you know, I remember there was one tough loss, and he'd gotten the ball on the goal line. It was the Jets game, right? And he didn't get it in, and he was really frustrated with himself because he says in the future they won't give you that opportunity if you're not making the most of it. So I think he's got a great head on his shoulder, and I think he's working really hard. He and his wife just had a baby boy as well.
Oh, great.
So, yeah. It was really cute. He tweeted him out. And again, another thing we've been talking about since we've been here is just the wealth of knowledge that's out there. And I know you've been out there, you've been meeting with a lot of coaches and whatnot. Give us some nuggets. What are some of the things that you've learned already, whether it's free agency or guys in the draft? What are some of the nuggets that you're walking away with that you weren't anticipating?
Well, I think the one interesting thing this year is, you know, with the cap numbers going up, some teams getting unexpected cap space, teams can spend a lot more, and the franchise tags aren't as prohibitive as they might have been in the past. But the question is, do you want to spend that much money? Like, cash-wise, is that smart? So even though you have all this cap space, how much of it are you going to spend? The cap is higher than it's ever been, and there's sort of a resetting of value. So, you know, if there's a left, like, for instance, you know, Bill's left tackle, Cordy Glenn, is going to be a free agent. Maybe he's not worth $11 million per year, but maybe they're, with the way teams have cap space this year with the lack of other players in the position on the market, maybe he commands $11 million per year. So I think we're going to see that at a lot of positions. A lot of marquee players are going to be tagged. They're going to be off the market. Von Miller, you know, Josh Norman, maybe Alshon Jeffrey, players like that, because teams can tag them to make sure that they have them if they don't strike long-term deals. And then it's, you know, how much do you want to spend? If you have the space to spend, is it wise to invest all this money in a player that you're not sure is at that elite tier, but that's what the market's calling for and you have the space to spend it, do you still do it? So I think that's been an ongoing storyline. The other thing is, I guess it's every year, but all the musical chairs at quarterback, you know, now Colin Kaepernick wanting out, you know, will Brock Osweiler stay in Denver? There's just a lot of moving pieces, I feel like, around the league, maybe more so than other years at the quarterback position.
And usually you don't expect the Giants to be one of those teams that are going to be heavily involved in free agency, but right now they're right at the top of that cap, you know, room list.
Yeah.
What's your overall feel from what you've been hearing about what people think the Giants might be up to when free agency starts in a couple weeks?
I just think talent on the defensive side of the ball. And I mean, I think that was abundantly clear when John Mara, you know, with his end of the season remarks, just that there's not championship caliber talent on the defense, and pass rusher, which has been the Giants' hallmark for so long, is such a huge need. They've got to spend a lot of money at that position. The linebacker, safety, I think. So you're looking at defensive end, linebacker, safety. I think those have got to be the top three targets in free agency with pass rusher number one.
No, I know that, you know, obviously under the Monday Morning Quarterback, you cover the NFL as a whole, but in reading a lot of your articles and what you covered the Buffalo Bills a lot more this season. I know Mario Williams is a guy that gets talked about with a lot of Giants fans. What can you kind of shed some light in regard to what do you think the Bills do? How do you think that situation pans out? And do you think he'd be a good fit for this Giants team?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Mario will be playing in Buffalo next year. I mean, I think that's just a matter of time before he's released. So, you know, I'm not sure. Last season was disappointing. And I covered Rex Ryan in New York. I know how his defense works. And I think, you know, there was a lack of buy-in from a lot of the players.
Wow.
And that was my sense of the system. I mean, I've seen that system. You know, you watched, you know, the Broncos stymie the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. And their game plan is very similar to the one that Rex Ryan has always used against the Patriots. If you watched it, I mean, they kind of flooded a bunch of defensive backs in the middle of the field, obviously pressuring Brady up the middle in his face. So, you know, I know that defense works, that system works. So to see Williams be so disgruntled, to me that's a little bit of a red flag, because if you're bringing in a guy in your team, you're going to have to pay him a lot of money. You want to make sure that he's a good locker room presence too, and it didn't seem like that was the case in Buffalo last year. So I think any team looking to bring him in, I think he still has talent, I think he can be a good fit for a team, but it's got to be a place where, you know, he's excited to be and he's going to buy in. And I don't know what those factors are. I don't know him personally, but you know, I think any team that's considering bringing him in has to kind of consider what happened last year in Buffalo.
Final question for me. What are you working on with Monday Morning Quarterback right now? Give us a preview of what we might be seeing from you or maybe on the site in general. I saw Peter, he walked in before. He's working on stuff.
Yeah.
Can you give us a little sneak preview of what fans might be able to see on Monday Morning Quarterback coming up soon?
Well, we mentioned sitting in on the interview, so I'll have the story on that on our site next week. So, you know, what the formal interview process is like. We talked about it a little bit more here, but we'll have that on the site next week. And, yeah, just right now trying to set up some projects to work on for the upcoming season. I think there's a lot of storylines in the NFL, and so it's a great opportunity with all the teams here to try to figure out, you know, can you follow a team through a season maybe, or, you know, is there an interesting player in the free agency process? So trying to figure that out.
I think what's going to be an interesting storyline, and I think you'll definitely hit on it at some point in time this season, is the analytics now. You know, and granted, yes, have analytics been a part of the process? It has, but has it been so prevalent, like in your face, like in regard to like it being talked about publicly? I don't think so. So this is like a whole new element in regard to equating analytics, combining it with football analysis and football scouting to make sure you're putting the best team together. I think it's going to be really intriguing.
Yeah, and obviously with the Browns, like, there's been that's been front and center. Are they going to do things differently? But there's a lot of teams across the league trying to figure out how much you incorporate analytics, what weight you put on it. I think there's some resistance from old school coaches who have done it a certain way a long time and never have had it. Then you hear from a lot of coaches who say it's not the end-all be-all, but it's another piece of information. I think that's where most teams fall, that they say we're willing to incorporate the analytics side. It's not the final say. It's just another piece of information that can help us make decisions and can help us game plan, things like that.
Jenny, great stuff.
As always.
Thanks for having me.
We love reading your stuff on Monday Morning Quarterback. Thank you so much for the time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Jenny Ventress, plenty more Big Blue Kickoff Live coming your way from the Combine in Indianapolis when we return.